Okay, thank you guys for being patient with me while I just had a bit of a water break and bathroom break. I'm back. What I was saying before was about serums and how they can contain microplastics. Moving on, after a serum, you would probably put a moisturizer on. Again, can contain microplastics such as dimethicone, carbomer, or acrylates. You're more likely to find carbomer in moisturizer. It's very frustrating. I mean, honestly, I just found out that my most favorite moisturizer, the Hyaluronic Moisturizing Factors by The Ordinary, contains carbomer. And I'm just so frustrated by this because The Ordinary was my favorite brand. It had really amazing simple formulations, advanced formulations, for pretty cheap. And this moisturizer is packaged in a plastic container, which is annoying, but because it was so basic and effective, I loved it so much and I'm really torn. Like I need to find a new moisturizer now at this point, and it's proved to be quite difficult for me to find it without microplastics in it. I'm really frustrated. Still though, The Ordinary, the brand, does have a lot of products in glass containers, in glass vials, and most of those products do not contain microplastics. So if you're on the look for a good serum, an effective serum that is more eco-friendly than others, that does not usually contain microplastics and is quite affordable, I would recommend The Ordinary. Not their sunscreen though. Their new sunscreen that just came out does contain liquid microplastics in it, which is very unfortunate, but for serums, they're a good brand. So the moisturizer in question, besides The Ordinary one that I found that has carbomer, which is a microplastic, the Laneige Water Bank Blue Hyaluronic Cream Moisturizer is the second best-selling moisturizer at Sephora, and it does contain acrylates, as what I was like I was saying before. It's the same C1030 Acyl Acrylate Cross Polymer. So this is a very common. Obviously, a very common polymer, an acrylate polymer that you will find in your skincare routine. So just be on the hunt for that. It has numbers in it, and I think me saying it multiple times at this point will be easier for you to keep an eye out for it. It is up to 38 USD for 1.6 fluid ounces. That's just ridiculous. Like I said again, I'm paying $36 for something packaged in plastic formulated with microplastics. Yes, it's a good brand in terms of effective formulations, but to me, there's a difference between effective formulations and sustainable formulations, and this is not a sustainable formulation. Moving on, eye cream, same thing that I said before, can contain carbomer and acrylates. And or acrylates. The example here that I'm giving is the Belief Aqua Balm Depuffing Eye Gel with caffeine and hyaluronic acid. It's the fourth best-selling eye cream at Sephora. And I also wanted to like do the rating system of it being best-selling because maybe you've bought this before and just didn't know it, or if you're like going into the store and you're looking for something new, you'll know that these are like popular products and to steer away from it. Similarly, it contains that numerized acrylic cross polymer. And so, like I was saying in my previous episode, a polymer is like a monomer form of the molecule, I believe. It's like a very small molecular version of it. And in that way, it penetrates your skin and is effective in the skincare. But that just means that microplastic is being absorbed into the skin because when it is that small, and when it's like in parts per million, that's how microplastics are measured as ppm, your skin can absorb it. So that's why this is very serious, because that's how it's being found in our bloodstream, because it's in water and it's because we're absorbing it on our skin while when it's being put on in this way. So just be on the lookout for that and your makeup and skincare products. I was thinking the next episode to kind of do the same thing, but for a makeup routine. But this kind of brings me to another point. All of these products are contained within plastic, like I said. So I'm specifically talking about liquid microplastics within the actual formulation of the product. The container can shed microplastics as well. And these containers, because, like, on average, at least for me, I go through maybe a moisturizer every like 3 months. So that's like three or four bottles of plastic that it will end up in landfill, probably. I mean, I really try hard to recycle everything, but it's easier said than done. And most of the time, these recycling plants don't actually do anything with the recycling. I will say, though, if you are on the hunt for like a good like body product that's moisturizing, like a body lotion or a body butter, and you can afford this, Lush, I know that I can understand how they could be a turnoff for some people, just because of like the super, I don't know, maybe it's really colorful and the scents are really intense, but they do have like mild scented stuff. Most of their ingredients are fair trade certified, and a lot of their products support charities, their own charities. So at least you know that that's being fair, they're fair trade ingredients. And also they have a really, really amazing circular recyclable program where you can use something that is theirs, that's they have their products are stored in plastic containers. But once you use it, you can bring it back, and they take that same plastic, they break it down, shred it, melt it, and then make another tube out of it, another pot out of it. So, like I said, I'm not trying to say all of this stuff to just make you feel bad. Like, this is a solution to how we can reduce plastic waste, is to have these brands have it circular within their actual company, like return the product, return the container to us, and we'll melt it down and just make a new one out of it. And like Lush, for example, does this well by incentivizing it. So if you like bring it back, you could get a discount for your next product. Or if you bring five of those like tubs back in varying sizes, you can get a free face mask. So it just like incentivizes the customer to build a loyal relationship with them. And know directly how their goods are being discarded and used. Parade is also another good example of like a circular recyclable program. Parade, this is actually super strange and weird, but it's like this is a solution. And this is something we could demand these makeup and skincare companies to do. So Parade is like an underwear brand, essentially. And they all their underwear and undergarments and like pajamas and swim now are made from recycled fibers, which is so fascinating. So basically they take like donated clothes and recycle the fibers. I mean, obviously they're cleaning it and sanitizing it and doing whatever, but they have this circular system where you can get these free packages, basically these free mailers, and you can mail them your clean underwear. It is so weird and sounds so perverted, but it's true because they are an underwear brand, and so you mail them your like wanting like this. But the thing is with underwear, that's why this is so interesting, is because you can't donate that to a secondhand store most times, unless it's like a nice bra or something, or like a nightgown. But something like underwear, that absolutely just ends up in landfill, and you use it until it breaks down, you know. Sorry, I'm just putting on some chapstick. But that's one example of how a niche market, a niche product type can become sustainable. Like I personally have mailed them like clean underwear that I no longer can use because maybe like a hole has ripped in it, and or it just is like too small now. It's just very fascinating. So these are examples. But I want to mention something else related to that. So, like I said, I'm not just talking about like the container being plastic, but I'm talking about liquid microplastics. I just want to clarify that. And there is kind of a debate in like the sustainability sector about glass versus plastic containers, because on one hand, a lot of companies now are using post-consumer recycled plastic, which is like the plastic has already been used before, and this and the company has like melted it down to create a new shape from it. So it's given it a second life, so it doesn't just like end up in trash and is never used again. And actually, I wrote a paper about Dr. Bronner's and how they were like kind of the pioneers to do that, to use post-consumer recycled plastic, which is just a random fun fact. They're an amazing, I have to say, they are an amazing skincare, body care brand. I could go so into depth about why they're amazing. I mean, honestly, I could do a whole episode on this brand because I wrote a research paper on them, essentially, or like a essay for my class, this academic year for my master's program. But yeah, that's also another company if you're looking for like some soap or something. I highly recommend them. They have amazing business practices, and just them using post-consumer recycled plastic is just another example of that. But the list is just infinite of how forward-thinking they are. But going back to what I was saying, in the sustainable sector, and just in the discussions happening, there is a debate whether or not glass is more sustainable versus plastic, in terms of makeup and skincare containers. Obviously, I think the average person would think, yeah, glass is more sustainable. I can reuse it. But I found out actually that glass does take more energy to manipulate. Like you're melting this down. It's a lot. Like glass, I think, needs like a higher heat point or something to melt it. So in turn, it uses more energy, and that energy could be fossil fueled, you know? So that's kind of like the trade-off is like, okay, I have glass, which doesn't shed microplastics, it's just glass. It lasts forever. I could reuse it for something else, especially if it's like a jar or has a pipette or something. Or I could use plastic. And I mean, you can turn that into a reusable container as well, but I don't know. It's just like a very difficult conversation to have because most companies opt out of using glass because it is energy efficient, and that means it's more expensive. You know, you're like, you need more glass, you need to pay for more materials, and then you also need to pay for more energy to manipulate those materials. And also then when you buy products with glass in like as the product holder, it's usually more expensive. So not only is it more costly for the company, but it's co more costly for the consumer. And that's kind of going back to what I was saying in the previous episode is like, man, I totally lost my train of thought there. I think it's like once you start to demand the alternative, then the alternative market ends up just being as con like as detrimental as the one it was replacing, you know? So like then if we start demanding more glass, then it's like, okay, well, the person has to pay more, and now we need these many materials. And it being more expensive is just not the option for a lot of people. I also think if you just think it's packaged in glass, it's more sustainable. So that's another like small example of how these companies manipulate the consumer. But that's just one thing to think about. Excuse me. Let me take a sip of water real quick. Okay. So lastly is sunscreen. Man, this is very hard for me. So again, contains microplastics. Most sunscreens now contain liquid microplastics. And the example I'm going to give, again from Sephora, is the Supergoop Unseen Sunscreen Invisible Broad Spectrum SPF 50 PA 3 pluses. So we're gonna go a little bit into like the skincare deciphering stuff right now, just so you guys understand why this is like an issue and how this affects different people. So it is the second best-selling sunscreen at Sephora, so it is very popular. It does contain dimethicone and dimethicone cross-polymer. Sunscreen is very tricky when it comes to formulation, microplastics, and inclusivity. Meaning that there, and I what I mean by that is there's a difference between mineral and chemical sunscreen. So mineral sunscreen, their formulas, the way that they work is that they sit on top of the skin and block rays at the surface. So basically the rays bounce off of your skin. And they do this by using ingredients like zinc oxide and titanium oxide. So when you see mineral sunscreen, those are usually the materials being used. It often is much thicker and can be kind of oily, maybe not the best for like certain skin types, and most often has a white cast. And it's l often less likely to be formulated with microplastics if you're just buying straight up mineral sunscreen. And we'll go into the white cast in a bit. While a chemical sunscreen absorbs rays like a sponge, so it like actually like takes the ray and just like breaks it down essentially. So it's not bouncing off. So the mineral sunscreen is like slightly more effective in the way that it just bounces instead of absorbs. But I mean, sunscreen is sunscreen. Like whatever is best for you is the right option. So chemical sunscreens absorb the rays, and they do this by using ingredients like oxybenzone, ovobenzone, octicillate, I don't know how to say that, octosrilene, homosalate, like these cuckoo words. They often have no white cast, but because they're not using minerals, they're not using zinc, which is like that pasty white stuff. They're not using minerals, no white cast, so therefore they're friendlier to darker skin tones. They can be harsher to sensitive skin because of like maybe fragrance or the smell, or just like the multiple types of ingredients being put in. And it is kind of more likely to be formulated with microplastics. Unfortunately, there's usually now a combination of both chemical and mineral filters in sunscreens. So yeah, it's quite difficult to find a non-microplastic sunscreen right now. But the difference between SPF and PA, as I said, S the specific sunscreen has SPF 50, PA 3 pluses. So the SPF rating on a sunscreen bottle stands for sun protection factor, a measurement of how long you could stay outside during the day and receive protection from the sun in the form of UVB rays. In America, the SPF rating system is common, and the FDA is notoriously old-fashioned with their filters and regulations. They almost never approve new filters. However, the sun doesn't only emit UVB rays, it emits UVA rays. So you might have seen this kind of PA plus rating in Asia and Europe, because they have a different institution that regulates health and safety products, obviously. They are more innovative because the updates happen more regularly. The letters PA stands for protection grade of UVA, followed by plus signs that appear on labels, and they are a rating system that was developed in Japan to represent how much UVA protection a product offers. So the sun's UVA rays do not cause sunburn. Rather, they cause skin to turn brown. UVA rays are known as the sun's silent killers because you don't feel them affecting skin. Despite the lack of pain associated with the UVA rays, they penetrate the skin very deeply, causing a somewhat different type of damage than UVB rays. So just to let you know, this is what the PA rating means. So if you see PA 1 plus, that's some UVA protection. If you see PA 2 pluses, that's moderate. PA 3 pluses, that's high. And PA 4 pluses, that's extremely high. So you want a combination of SPF and PA because it protects you against different types of sun rays. In essence, then, sunscreen is essential no matter the weather or season. If it's daylight, you need sunscreen, period. Even if you don't feel heat, your DNA is being exposed to rays that basically scramble it and can cause cancer. Yes, it's very complicated. It's all science. I love it so deeply. And then lastly, I mean, there's two more things, but then you have sunscreen application, a sunscreen reapplication in the form of like a sun stick. And polyethylene and acrylates are the most common microplastic in this type of product. If you look at for a sun stick, like you're most likely going to find polyethylene or acrylates in them. In this case, it makes it feel slick and easy to glide on. And by formulating it with these kinds of polymers, usually it doesn't have a white cast. So it's very easy for reapplication and not messing up your makeup and stuff. It's extremely frustrating to me because sunscreen reapplication is necessary. I mean, especially for me, like I'm pale as a sheet of white paper. So, like, I need to be on my sunscreen game, but I haven't been able to purchase a new sunstick. I ran out of my old one, and every one that I've looked at has microplastics formulated in it. Like, every single sunstick has microplastics in it. It almost feels like there's no choice but to buy sunscreen sticks with microplastics. Like I said, I'm currently on the hunt. So if I find one that is not formulated with microplastics, I'll definitely let you guys know. And like I said, essentially, the best sunscreen is the one that you'll wear. It feels very important to note, though, the difference between filters because of who can wear it and who can avoid microplastics in their cosmetics. I hope in the future there are more chemical sunscreen options that formulate without microplastics, or companies can find a way innovatively to make mineral sunscreen that has no white cast so that darker skinned people can buy sunscreen that fits their skin tone and does not contain microplastics. It's kind of crazy that it's like the paler you are, the more likely you can avoid microplastics in your skincare because you can buy mineral sunscreen and like the pastiness of the zinc won't really like bother you as much because it's like closer to your skin tone. So it's really crazy like how institutional microplastics are in regulation, but also just like this is low-key an example of like institutional racism in my opinion. So I hope in the future that that's where it goes, better chemical sunscreen formulation, better mineral sunscreen formulation to just fit those two criteria I mentioned. And then lastly, I mean, most people use chapstick, which also often has fossil fuel derived ingredients or a blend of microplastic copolymers, frost polymers to retain water in skin. So the reason why something like petroleum, which is from fossil fuels, is kind of like an offshoot of fossil fuels. Like that's why microplastics and petroleum are so good because they prevent transepidermal water loss, which causes our skin to dry out, retains water in skin. So God, it's just everywhere. So just I hope that in summary, these are some of the ingredients to watch out for. I mean, this is a lot, but the basic ones are acrylates in those numbers, as well as polyethylene. And fossil fuel derived ingredients. But these are some more specific ones. If you're able to memorize them, just be on the lookout. So polyethylene is the worst. Polypropylene, polymethylmethacrylate, terephthalate, PVP, acrylates, like I said, carbomer, like I said, styrene, dimethicone, silicone, nylon, and polyester. So moving on a little bit, we're going to talk about microplastics and climate change. I only have like 7 more minutes, so I hope I'm able to get through this. So just be patient with me if I'm talking quickly. So the articles being referenced, the first one is called Binary Climate Data Visuals Amplify Perceived Impact of Climate Change. This was published in April 2025, can be found at Nature Human Behavior. Like I said, this is a scholarly research article. The second one is synthetic polymers in personal care and cosmetics products as a source of microplastic pollution. It's published in September 2022, can be found in Marine Pollution Bulletin Volume 182 or directly on Science Direct Online. Again, this is a scholarly research article. They say, for much of the global population, climate change appears as a slow, gradual shift in daily weather. This leads many to perceive its impacts as minor and results in apathy. For example, the boiling frog effect. So if you've never heard of this, the boiling frog effect, the boiling frog effect is the notion that a frog immersed in gradually heating water will fail to notice the creeping change in its circumstances, even if it's literally being boiled alive. Contemporary research scientists and researchers don't really like subscribe to this notion, but it's a metaphor for the way in which humans are so unbothered by irreversible climate change. So this so-called boiling frog effect makes gradual change difficult to spot. And now surveys show that the increasing number of extreme climate events, including floods, wildfires, hurricanes, has not raised enough awareness of the average person posed by climate change. Instead, people change their idea of what they see as normal. So how it's related to microplastics. We're used to microplastic being added into everything. Most of us have no education on what microplastic really is, how it's categorized, regulated, and the potential effects. So the boiling frog effect in relation to microplastics is that we're being normalized to this ingredient. And because it's relatively new, it's harder to study the long-term effects. So we just think it's normal. Some ways to better influence the public. So this is a positive note. And how researchers are trying to more accurately influence the average individual to how severe climate change is getting. Researchers wondered if climate change can be more, made more obvious by presenting it in binary terms, AKA before and afters. Some test subjects were shown temperature graphs of the fictional town's winter conditions. Others had a chart showing whether or not a fictional lake froze every year. The results showed those who received the binary data, so that's just like one or the other, consistently saw climate change as a more real and imminent threat. So, like I said, binary data gives a clearer impression of the before and after. So even though the underlying data is the same, continuous data results is less understood. These results should help drive more effective ways of communicating the impact of climate change in the future. So this is a positive because then it's like, okay, now we know how to like better influence the public. But moving on to the second research paper. Acrylic copolymer, like I said, was the most recorded microplastic in a theoretical amount of 21.4 trillion mil trillion 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 microplastic particles annually are released. So microplastics have been identified as a potential detrimental root cause for many organisms in aquatic environments, as these microplastics can finally end up in water sources. So, like at the end of the microplastic journey, they're traveling, they end up in water. Microplastics are accidentally consumed by larvae, zooplankton, and small crustaceans, fishes as a food source in aquatic environments. And therefore, microplastics can be transferred among faunal species through food chains and food webs. In addition, some studies have discovered the lethal impacts of microplastics, such as malnutrition and starvation. The declining rate of reproduction and internal damage to tissue and organs of faunal groups, namely copepods, mussels, oysters, and other crustaceans in marine environments, because they're ingesting microplastics. Besides, leaching and absorption of chemicals and other pollutants to microplastics also causes transfer of chemicals and toxins via microplastics through ingestion. So it's not just microplastics, it's like all the stuff that's in it is being absorbed into them and just like destroying them from inside out. I mean, ultimately, these microplastics are being transferred to humans via the food chain and food webs, and this causes numerous health issues for humans. Consequently, the impacts of microplastics can range from small levels, like the crustaceans, to higher levels of organisms like humans. Because of this, quantification of microplastics released into aquatic environment is necessary but challenging, as it's such a new field and there's limited technology to measure it as well as like take this stuff out. Oh God. So yeah, I mean, it's one positive to kind of say where we go now from quantifying research, how we can be more effective in research. But I want to explain the awful, awful effects that microplastics in our skincare can do to the ecosystem, Like I said, something like SLS, which is it's not a microplastic, but can disrupt wastewater filtering to just microplastic itself is messing up like the bottom of the food chain and eventually ends up in our stomach because we're eating the stuff in the ocean. Yeah, it's really intense. Like I said, you can reach out if you want to read these research articles, anything I said. Please ask any questions. I'm happy to talk to you about it. To end this, like I said, one brand to protest. I mentioned this brand in the previous episode, but I'm protesting the brand Ilia. They advertise themselves as a clean, yet as a clean beauty brand, yet formulate some of their products with microplastics. Excuse me. I demand that they reformulate. With enough money to be in Sephora, they can afford to reformulate without these ingredients that are detrimental to the environment. And like I said, specifically the aquatic environment. And so a brand I recommend is Zero Waste Store, no spaces, zerowastestore.com. This is an online storefront that offers some clean beauty options. So like I said, still be on the lookout for those specific ingredients that I was saying. I mean, the easiest one to be on the lookout that seemed to be most common was the Numerize acrylates. So just be on the lookout. And if you're in the hunt for something new, like I said, zerowastestore.com has some options, household options. Like it's like a whole eco-friendly storefront for anything that you might need. They do have clean beauty options. But also for any body care. Yeah, Dr. Bronner's is amazing. But yeah, I hope that now it's the end of my episode. I hope that you learn a lot about how microplastics can be snuck into our daily routines, as well as some more hard evidence about how microplastics are affecting the environment, specifically aquatic animals and fauna. And how it disrupts them, and how it disrupts water, and how it disrupts water treatment facilities and the animals within water. It's crazy. So just be on the lookout for all of that stuff. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I'm sorry it was like super intense, maybe with facts and examples, but that's the point of this. And I love being a nerd about this. So, like I said, thank you so much for tuning in to Makeup Microplastics with Marley at Moss Radio. Thank you so much for listening. I'm so grateful. Like I said, if you have any questions, you're welcome to ask me, and I'm happy to answer them or just have a conversation. I love you guys. Just be on the lookout and demand that these companies reformulate and protest by not buying from them. That's how we can make a difference. Have an amazing new start to your week. Love you.